This is Creepy and Geeky, a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. Welcome to Creepy and Geeky. I'm your host, Robert, and on today's What's Your Favorite Double Feature episode, Jason LeBlanc returns to the show to talk about the Vincent Price films House on Haunted Hill and House of the Long Shadows. Jason runs the Boston Horror Society, a social group for horror fans in New England that can be found on Meetup and Facebook. Welcome back to the show, Jason.
Hey, Robert, it's great to be back, especially to talk about two Vincent Price movies with you. Twice the price.
Yeah, twice the price. There you go. So you brought me these movies. Why were these the movies that you wanted to bring to me?
Well, I wanted to discuss Vincent Price in general because he's like one of these figures in the horror genre that I hold a special place in my heart for. I can kind of like track my love of the genre back. And it can kind of like pinpoint exactly when it was. And it was watching like Vincent Price on TV as a kid. So the opportunity to talk about like a couple of his movies, specifically in the horror genre. I mean, he did a lot of films over his career. He did like dramas and comedies, but I mean, he's most associated with the horror genre.
So,
it was a perfect opportunity. Two movies that were Vincent Price is in creepy old houses and stuff goes horribly wrong. Why not?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Now, and for me, I'll admit, as big of a horror person as I am, I have not seen that many Vincent Price movies. Mm-hmm. I tend to my horror watching tends to not go too much further back than the 70s. Mm-hmm. And that's just because I haven't really delved back much farther than that yet. But I'll get there. But it was a neat opportunity. The only one of these I'd seen before was House on Haunted Hill. I'd seen that one as part of Elvira's 40th anniversary special she did on Shudder a couple of years ago. And this is one of her favorite movies. So I was like, okay, then I'll check it out. See what I think of it. Cause everybody knows I'm a huge Elvira fan. So this was an interesting double feature for sure. I know we talked about, when you and I talked about doing this, the whole format is that guests send me like 3 to 5 different double features. Mm-hmm. We actually had a different double feature we were going to potentially do that ended up not happening because one of the movies fell off of Tubi. And so I was like, okay, let's switch over to the Vincent Price ones. And you actually gave me 4 Vincent Price movies to choose from. And I thought these two were kind of, after watching the trailers, I figured these two were kind of compatible with each other, and they actually ended up being fairly in tune with each other, especially being something that was like what 24 years apart from one another. So it was an interesting double feature to be sure.
Yeah, there is a bit of a gap between these two movies. I know House on Haunted Hill came out in 59.
Oh, 59. So that's even 34 years. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's almost like you're in the 60s at that point. No. It's very close. And then House of Long Shadows, I believe, is like early 80s.
I was right. It was 24 years because 83 is when House of the Long Shadows came out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting to watch both movies back to back because you've got sort of like, you know, more middle age, and you've got to the other film, and you've got Vincent Price sort of like in the much older phase of his career. But still, you know, giving his all in both performances, I feel.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I enjoy him as a performer in general, is that there's never been a movie of his that I've watched where I ever felt like he was phoning it in, which is like half of a performance, like saying like, well, this is a low budget film. It's filming in Europe. I can just like, you know, cash the check. It doesn't matter. But I mean, he's always giving his most in every performance.
Right. And,
just to, before we dive into both of those films.
Yeah.
I just like the whole reason I got into Vincent Price in the first place was because he growing up, there was a TV show that I watched a lot and that was local to Massachusetts called The Creature Double Feature.
Mm.
The title is kind of gives you an idea of what it's about. It was basically a double feature of two monster movies or horror films.
Right.
And I remember the first thing I ever saw him in was this movie called, and it was one of the other films that I threw out as a suggestion, but I'm fine with these two as well. It was called the Monster Club.
It was
an anthology movie where the framing device was Vincent Price and John Carradine. Price playing a vampire, Carradine playing a writer, and the vampire being a fan of the writer and wanting to introduce the writer to a club where all these monsters hang out and party at night. And it's actually, you can find it. It's, I think Joe Bob did an episode on Monster Club. And it's just, even in that film, I mean, it was a low budget film that was filmed in London. The effects, the makeup effects are very, very cheesy, but at no point do you feel like Vincent Price is like slumming it. He's giving his all. And he has like, at the end, if you've never seen it, I would recommend watching Monster Club just for like the final speech Price gives at the end of the movie. It's like perfect. But yeah, that's it's kind of like one of the reasons why I wanted to like highlight him on this episode. So
when I looked at Monster Club, I looked at the trailer. I almost chose that one to go along with House of the Long Shadows, actually, because I figured 280s era movies would be interesting to do. But I was like, you know what, let's do the House on the Haunted Hill because it's such a classic. That I figured that was probably the best one. And, you know, I might not have an opportunity to talk about it again in the future, depending on, you know, who brings me what. Exactly. So I figured it was a good opportunity at the time. So, let's go ahead and talk about House on a Haunted Hill. Like you said, 1959 is when it came out. It's a William Castle movie. So it's very much a probably... I don't know much of the history of it, but knowing William Castle, I'm sure he had some gimmicks. Oh, you know what? I think I do know about this one. He had like flying skeletons in the theaters, right?
Yes. Yeah. That was one of his gimmicks. He was very well known. William Castle is part filmmaker, part
huckster.
Arnold Barker.
Yeah.
Because like, it seemed like every movie of his, either something happened in the theater that was a gimmick or some promotional part of the movie's marketing was a gimmick. Yeah. But you're correct about the skeletons playing a part. And like, if you went to certain theaters, they would drop down a skeleton that would like swing by the screen. And apparently I read about this, like kids who would see the movie and then when the skeleton would drop, they would just start throwing their concessions at the skeleton, like hucking candy. And
that's, you know, too funny.
So when people say that, you know, people at theaters don't really respect the theater going experience, I don't really know they understand the history of like what's happened in the past.
Oh yeah. No, it's yeah. People, it's so funny. Like, I don't get me wrong. Like I like going to the theater and I like when people are quiet and, you know, doing their thing and everything, you know, and I don't want people to get up and be rude, but yeah, there is a history of people just being rude and loud and obnoxious. You see, like, people talk about it too, is like, you look at Scream 2.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the opening to Scream 2, people love that opening. They're like, that's what I would want to go to. No, I would not want to go to an opening, like a preview screening of a movie where people are going nuts the entire time. I wouldn't be able to watch the movie. Like, that wouldn't be fun for me at all. But that's kind of how sometimes movies were back in the day, you know. Mm-hmm. So there's you know, some footage of that kind of stuff going on. You can look in the past. Now, I mean, was that typical? Maybe. Who knows? But, you know, especially I would think, especially for something like a William Castle thing, that, you know, when something like that happens, you're going to definitely get a little bit more audience reaction. But I think that's also expected as well. So,
yeah, very true. I think whenever you would, if back in the day you were going to a William Castle movie, I don't think it was like some sort of art house film
no,
you were watching.
Exactly.
People knew that they were going in for like kind of like a roller coaster,
an interactive experience. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's yeah, I think, and again, the movie itself kind of lends itself to that as well. You know, there's definitely there's the floating head guy talking about you know, about the house. You've got Vincent Price's narration. It's just there's so much going on in this movie that just kind of lends itself to kind of that that kind of interactive, kind of spectacle, kind of, you know, the William Castle experience, really. If you know anything about William Castle, and if you don't, go watch the Joe Dante movie Matinee, because that is a great version of him and what he kind of brought to the whole movie going experience. Because he made movie going, like we've said, interactive and interesting in a way that nobody's done since.
And even like the intro, like you're saying, I mean, Vincent Price is directly addressing the audience and saying like, oh, there'll be food and drinks and ghosts and perhaps even a few murders. You're all invited.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not subtle. It's not subtle.
No, not at all.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. No, it's a fun movie. For sure. It's one of those ones that, I enjoyed it the first time I saw it. It was an enjoyable viewing. And this time it was still just as enjoyable. It's, you know, it's definitely, I would like to see, I know they made a version of it in 1999. Mm-hmm. And I haven't, I need to rewatch that version. I'm actually going to be rewatching that one again soon. But I haven't seen that one since probably 99, 2000, when it came out on video. But
I kind of like the remake, though. It's got a interesting visual vibe to
right.
it. I think William Malone, the director,
yeah,
gave it, and it has a good solid cast to it.
So, I'd like to see somebody make like a newer, more modern kind of remake of it. Not necessarily that it has to be done at all. I have no problem with remakes. I know that a lot of people are against remakes of all sorts, but I think it'd be kind of fun, maybe if they even did it kind of as a throwback to that era. You know, don't do a modern remake. I don't know. It'd be fun either way. I think the just kind of do either version. It'd be a lot of fun just to see what they did with it.
I mean, I could picture how you could probably do a modern version of House on Haunted Hill. I mean, if you decided to make it like, I know this is like a reality show.
Yeah,
that was the first thing that popped into my head, because I mean, when you think about what the premise of this, the original is, I mean, he's throwing a party, but they have to stay the night in the haunted house and then they win a cash prize.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of one of the draws of any reality show. It's like you have to compete in order to win some sort of large monetary amount.
Yeah.
So I could see how you could probably do that. But yeah, if you did, somebody wanted to do like a version that was like a period piece,
yeah,
but a little bit with a modern sensibility, I could see either version working.
Yeah, because I was thinking, like, you know, if they did a period piece with modern sensibility, it'd be kind of similar to the newer like Murder on the Orient Express type of movie that they just did recently. So I would think that would be an interesting way of pulling the story forward, at least with, you know, again, like you said, modern sensibilities, but setting it in the past, so it wouldn't seem as, because there are definitely some things when watching something of this era, the 50s and 60s and stuff like that, things that are very hokey. You know, especially like the music is always just like, that's one of the things about watching older movies that always gets me so much, is like this, the music, the scores that they did, they're so over the top and bombastic at times, and you're just like, okay, let's have some more subtle sounds here. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a lot of fun. I like the idea behind it. Obviously, the idea behind it is that Vincent Price's character has this wife, his I guess fourth wife, that they're not on good terms with each other. She won't agree to a divorce because she wants all of his money. And so she's setting out, or he sets up this party with all of these guests, and you know, people that supposedly she doesn't know, and gives them that, like you said, that prize of $10,000 if they can stay the night in this haunted house that's not his, that they just rented, but the guy who owns it is one of the guests as well. So, and he knows, and he's kind of paranoid about the whole thing. And it's a wild movie. It's like, that's why I think that it would be really cool to have like a more modern version of it. Like we said, modern sensibilities, maybe throwback setting. I think it'd be a lot of fun just to kind of play with it a little bit.
Yeah. Cause it's one of those concepts that hasn't really aged. I mean, you've always got people that are a little bit hard, you know, hard up for money, and they need, I mean, obviously $10,000 isn't like as large of a sum today as.
Yeah. You'd have to change then. That. Yeah.
Yeah. They'd have to update the amount,
like,
but
maybe
I mean,
$1 million. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's all that, but I mean, like the concept of somebody just needing cash and needing it in a, as quickly as possible and willing to do something unusual to get that money. I don't think that would ever really change no matter what the time period. And, yeah, and just the relationship between, you know, the Lorenz, Price's character, and his current wife. It's just, they could use some counseling.
Yeah,
just a little bit,
or just a divorce. You know,
either.
he's wanting that divorce. She's just not wanting to give it to him because she does like. There's definitely some deep seated antagonism there. It makes it interesting because you're just like, okay, so what's going on here? You know, what's the whole play here? And there's definitely some ghosty things going on because the guy, the guy who owns the house says seven people have died in this house, four men and three women, and it just corresponds to exactly how many people are alive in the house at that time too. Mm-hmm. So it's like one ghost for each of them. To me, the most effective, like, kind of scare, or the scariest thing in this is early on when I think it's Nora,
yes.
And the other guy, I can't think of his name offhand, but
Lance,
yeah,
the pilot.
Nora and Lance, they go walking around, and they go back down to the cellar where he had gotten trapped inside of a room. And she had gotten locked out of it. And so while he's trapped in there and gets knocked out by somebody or something, she sees a ghostly apparition of an old woman, mm-hmm. who seems to be kind of floating towards her. And then later on, they kind of go back and go reinspect the room, and the room adjacent to it. And she gets trapped in there for a moment. And there's that old lady right there. And it was such a good, like, jump scare. Cause that old lady looks scary as hell.
She's
just like, just standing there with her hands out and her face, just like looking evil and everything. It was such a great, it's like an iconic, picture too.
It does hold up. And I mean, yeah. Just the way you were describing it, she kind of glides.
Yeah, she just glides.
She doesn't like, I mean, I'm guessing she might have been on roller skates or something.
Yeah. And just being pulled. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, just the way she moves, it's very, and that expression, she just has that frozen, like her fingers out and her jaw open. And it's just, it reminds me of something that would, I'm almost certain James Wan probably has seen this movie because.
Oh, yeah.
Me a bit of like the ghosts from Insidious.
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt it at all, but yeah, I cause she scares her. She's just standing there. She looks back and there she is. And then she just glides out of the room, you know? And it's such a weird, like, a scene in general, but it's just like spooky and like for a 1959 movie. And see, I don't get scared of anything. I literally like will rarely a jump scare will get me. Now, I will admit this one didn't get me either, but it's just, it's a fun one though. That's what I like about it. Whether the jump scares get me or not, I always appreciate how fun they are. So I like, that's what, that was what was good about this one. It was just like, oh, this one's actually like pretty cool. Like I, that's what I liked about it, was it was just fun in general. But
regarding jump scare,
yeah.
Just
Yeah.
a bit of trivia. So I don't know if you remember those Bravo specials that they would do, like the 100 scariest movies of all time or scariest moments.
I've heard of them, yeah.
So they did, that was actually, that made the list, and the
Yeah.
person that talked about that sequence the most was Tom Savini.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, to have somebody who's created so many like gross and disturbing moments on cinema,
Yeah.
something like that sequence scared him as a kid.
Yeah.
It holds up very well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, it definitely, I think that's one of those ones that, like you said, I think that, you know, it can definitely be an inspiration for filmmakers even today in terms of just the spook factor. It's a good jump scare. It's very eerie. The makeup effects are really good. You know, especially for the time period. So it's definitely one of those ones that I think is it's just iconic. It's just, I think that anybody watching this movie, when you see that scene in particular, especially when you get towards the end, you got the floating skeleton and everything like that, and that one's just so cheesy and weird, that it's just too goofy. But yeah, why don't you tell me what it is about this movie that speaks to you?
It's just kind of checking off a lot of boxes that I really enjoy.
Okay.
It's in some ways, it feels like it's a murder mystery story in some cases, because you've got all these characters that kind of in one self-contained location. They all have very different personalities and are bouncing off each other very well.
Right.
I love the dialogue, like you were saying. particularly the sequences with the Lorens as they bicker about each other.
Yeah. Yeah, those are great sequences.
They have some really good lines in that. I think he's like at one point shaking a bottle of champagne, and the wife's like, "Don't do that. It's going to make it flat." And then he's like teasing her, like, "Well, it'll make a good headline: Playboy kills wife with champagne cork."
Yeah.
So that's, and yeah, some of the effects are very effective. Some of them aren't, but I mean, that's kind of like the charm of this movie. I mean, it's just. Nowadays, whenever you see a new movie that comes out, you can kind of point to it and saying like, "Oh, well, that's done with CGI, and that this movie had like a budget of like 30, 40 million." But I mean, this is a film that was probably made for like maybe, I don't know, a million. I don't in 1950s money, which isn't,
Yeah.
or maybe even under that, and it still holds up. It still has this charm to it that I like a lot. And it also has this weird logic to it, like the fact that there's a vat of acid that is
Yeah.
still in the building, even though it was somebody has already died previously because of it.
Yeah.
At no point did the police or anybody decide to like, "Okay, I guess we got to get rid of this thing."
Well, and then the owner himself, he's there. He shows them the vat of acid and everything. It's like, one, why didn't you empty that? Two, why are you showing everybody this? Like, you're just giving anybody a chance to murder somebody in that with no evidence later. So it's just such
It's
a
a good
weird thing to
conversation
do.
starter.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Hey, check out the
Here's
vat of
this.
acid we got in the basement.
Yeah, here's it. Look, I'll show you. It's real. I'm gonna throw this fish into it. yeah, no, it's definitely like poor choices, dude. Poor choices. too funny. Yeah, no, it is a very fun movie. I think it's definitely one of those ones that's been kind of influential on things, you know, whether directly or indirectly. Like you said, you can kind of see a correlation with James Wan's work, Especially in stuff like maybe even the Conjuring series, where he's more spook, not gore. Just it's just, you know, Vincent Price. I mean, it's just anytime you get to let Vincent Price just, you know, run with stuff and just be a menace, it's just a lot of fun. So,
But yeah, it's a fun film. I really enjoy it. And you know what
yeah.
also the appeal of this movie is? And it's 1 hour and 15 minutes.
Oh, it's super short. Yeah, it's a quick watch. Yeah,
There's not a
and there's no and there's no even with that hour and 15, there's no boring spots. There's no, because sometimes even I've watched movies recently that were round about the same amount of time, and they're slow bits. And I'm like, how do you have a slow bit in a movie this short? It should all be killer, no filler. So, and that's what this movie is. Like, there's no moment really, even though they're just kind of walking around and talking and everything at first, things start to happen pretty quickly, you know? So there's a death pretty early on, and there's just, and you know, I don't want to spoil it too much, because I mean, even though it's an older movie and everything, it's kind of one of those ones that's kind of fun to watch and discover a lot of the fun bits for yourself. And normally I would spoil things. I'm not immune to that at all, but I think this one's one of those ones that's a lot of fun to not spoil.
Oh, no, I don't want to like reveal how it
Now
ends
the
either.
next movie I'm going to spoil, because there's things that need to be spoiled about that one, because there's context for later. But
Exactly.
yeah. But this one, definitely don't want to spoil that one.
No, and it's actually fun to watch the original and then watch the remake to notice like what they decide to do different in the remake.
Yeah.
So
That's
I won't
cool.
spoil either, but I mean, yeah, it's
Yeah.
both of them go in different directions that, and both of those directions are fun to watch.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, it's the this one, and there's not a lot to talk about it, because then you do start to spoil things. But yeah, it's definitely check it out. It's a lot of fun. It's quick. Vincent Price is doing a good job at you know, just kind of moving the plot along, in the best way, not in a bad way. It's just, and while generally I think a lot of the other characters are kind of, they can kind of be bland. They're not, they don't get a lot, because of the short running time, you don't get a lot of time to flesh them out too much. But there's definitely there's some double crosses, there's some shenanigans going on. Definitely check it out. It's a lot of fun if you haven't seen it. And if you haven't seen it, definitely go watch it, because it's a classic for sure. With that being said, do you have anything else you wanted to mention about that movie specifically before we move on?
The only thing I'll also add to House on Haunted Hill, if you were mentioning that your first exposure to this film was through Elvira,
Yes.
mine was actually through Riff Tracks.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, so
Interesting.
there is a Riff Tracks version of House on Haunted Hill,
Yes.
which you can find online.
You can find it on Tubi, actually. They do have the
Exactly.
version on Tubi as well.
Yeah, so if you can have. You watch the movie first on its own. It's fun on its own, but if you want to get like a second viewing and enjoy it even more, the Riff Tracks version is quite enjoyable. I
Yeah.
recommend it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've listened to, it's been years since I have, but I used to listen to some of the Riff Track stuff, or watch some of the Riff Track stuff once in a while. So it's definitely fun stuff. And you know, if anybody's not familiar, Riff Tracks is basically an updated version of Mystery Science Theater, where they do, instead of doing, you know, the obscure, really super low budget stuff, they actually do classic and modern movies as well. So, and that, it's definitely a lot of fun. I used to enjoy their listening to their version of The Dark Knight, which was a lot of fun. So Yeah, so let's go ahead and move on to the House of the Long Shadows, or House of the Long Shadows, not the. It is. It was in 1983. It's got the main character is played by Desi Arnaz Jr., which is weird. but it stars also John Carradine, Vincent Price, Peter Cushing, and Christopher Lee. Like. Or mountains of horror, of classic horror cinema. So it definitely is a fun watch for that as well. Why don't you tell me again why this one spoke to you enough to want to talk about it today?
Well, I wanted to, I threw this out as a suggestion because I had never seen it.
Oh, okay.
I've actually, this was a first time watch for me. So but I've always heard of it because I actually have a book about like Vincent Price's entire filmography.
Okay.
And I've seen quite a few of the movies in the book, but I'd never seen House of Long Shadows. And like you're saying, I mean, you started listing off the actors who are in this movie.
Yeah.
It's a Mount Rushmore of classic horror film actors.
Yeah.
But the lead is also Desi Arnaz Jr.
Right.
So just some context there. Yeah. It's like, it's not like Christopher Lee is the lead or Price is the lead. It's Desi Arnaz Jr. But it's still, I kind of dug the movie. I had some issues with it, but yeah, I did enjoy it more than I thought I would. So I
enjoyed it. I thought that it was generally okay. I think Desi Arnaz Jr. is kind of a weak lead.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely not a seasoned actor. And you know, that's, you know, it is what it is. It's not a huge deal breaker, because like we said, we got the four big actors in this, getting to have fun and playing around, doing what they do best. And, you know, they go to this, Desi Arnaz is a writer who says he can write a book in 24 hours, like a classic in the tone of, I don't even remember what the book is now.
Oh, I think they reference Wuthering Heights.
Yeah, Wuthering Heights. Yeah, so something that's a classic. He can type one out in 24 hours, and so his publisher takes that bet. And says they'll give him $20,000, and he's got a house that he can go to that will be great fodder for him to, a great inspiration for him to write this book. And so he goes and he gets there, and suddenly there's weird people there. This old man and woman are there, and then two other people show up. Well, three other people show up, including the secretary of his publisher, who was supposedly part of a plot by the publisher to derail him so that he wouldn't finish the book in time.
Mm-hmm.
But also these four people played by John Carradine, Vincent Price, Peter Cushing, well, five, I guess, Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, and the woman who I can't remember her name now.
Yes. I believe it's supposed to be playing John Carradine's daughter.
Yeah.
Like she's like, they're supposed to be father and daughter. They're taking care of the mansion at first. I believe that's
Sheila Keith is the actress.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So she plays the daughter of when they first meet, John Carradine and Sheila Keith are supposedly the caretakers of this house. And then later on, Peter Cushing shows up, then Vincent Price, and then even later, Christopher Lee shows up. So all of a sudden, all these people are in this house where he was supposed to be alone to write his book. And so, you know, it's every time somebody comes, there's like, so when Peter Cushing shows up, he's supposedly a stranded motorist looking for a phone. And then, but when Vince Price shows up, Vince Price says, oh, well, he's the son of the original owners of the house, and that this is his house. And, you know, this is, you know, that everybody in here is like trespassing or whatever. And but then Christopher Lee shows up and says he's the true owner of the house. He's the guy who bought the land and the property and everything, and he wants everybody out. And nobody goes. And then like there's this whole plot where there's like where they discover that like Vincent Price, John Carradine, Sheila Keith, and Peter Cushing are all related. They're all the family of the people because they discover the portraits on the walls upstairs of all of these people. But there's one portrait missing, the son named Roderick. And they're trying to figure out, okay, well, he was trapped in a room when he was 14 and he's been in there supposedly the whole time. It's a convoluted, weird story.
It is. It's
but
just
it's
hearing
fun.
You like
it's
trying
actually
to summarize
fun
it.
though.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot, but it's actually fun. It's a, you know, it's a lot more linear than that. I'm kind of jumping all over the place, but it's fun because there's this little mystery going on, like, because supposedly now they go inside the room and the son's gone. This Roderick son is gone. He's been in there 40 years, been supposedly trapped in this room for 40 years. But he's gone. He's not in there. He's escaped. And then members of the family die. They die off. And they're just trying to figure out what's going on. And it's not really played for laughs, but there's definitely a weird little comedic streak going through the whole movie. I think there's a playfulness, I think, is more than anything, is it just a playful streak going through the whole movie. And I think that's what kept it fun and light for me.
Yeah, it does definitely has its tongue in cheek throughout most of the film. I mean, I think at one point Vincent Price is talking, he's like, when he arrives, he's talking about his ties to the house, and Desi Arnaz Jr. has some questions for him, and Vincent Price at one point says, "Oh, please don't interrupt while I soliloquize." It's like,
yeah.
And Peter Cushing's accent, like what he's going for with that, or speech impediment, or whatever he's doing there. It's amusing. I mean, he didn't have to do it, but he puts it in there. And it's a movie that definitely knows the history of these actors, and
yes,
all in the same like setting that feels very appropriate for all of them. Like, so it's fun in that sense. I do find it amusing that the publisher decided to take up the author on the bet.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of a weird bet, because it's like when you say it's like, oh, I swear I can write this novel in like 24 hours. Having known writers myself, like there's nothing saying that he can't arrive at the hotel, at the mansion, and open up a suitcase and be like, "Hey, I've already got all these pre-written books that I worked on that I haven't been able to get published. Let me see. I have my crime novel. I have my romance. Oh wait, gothic novel right there. Take that out.
Yeah,
just change the date.
Maybe tweak a few things in it. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, but it's still. But again, and we also have a movie that starts off with a bet.
Yeah.
Or, you know, trying to challenge somebody. It's like, I bet you can do this. And if you do, you get this money, but I don't think you can.
Right. Yeah. No. And I think, yeah. And so I want to talk about the ending, because the ending is really important. Well, the endings. So, because at the end of all this, like pretty much the entire Grisbane, because it's discovered through the course of this, the only two people who are left of the older folk are Christopher Lee and Vincent Price. And you discover that Christopher Lee is really Roderick. He's been out and about. He's been, you know, coming back once in a while to, you know, pretend like he's still in the room, but he's been out and about for a while. And then you discover, because he was supposedly put in that room because he supposedly murdered some girl when he was 14. And that was his punishment, was to be locked in that room forever. But it turns out that it was really Vincent Price's character that killed her, and Christopher Lee was there to kill him in retaliation for being locked up in there the whole time. So then there's so he does, he kills him, he kills Vincent Price, and then he attacks Desi Arnaz, and Desi Arnaz somehow manages to kick him down the steps, Christopher Lee's character apparently dies. But like immediately after that happens, he gets up and there's a sinister laughing from upstairs. And then so all of the dead people who've died throughout the course of the movie all start to wander out from other rooms and gather into the hallway in front of the foyer. And it turns out it was all pretend. It was all acting. All on the publisher's behest that they all did this like fun thing again to distract him, to keep him from writing the book. And so that's the first ending. Mm-hmm. So we have it where, and so you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's fun. That's not bad. That's a fun ending. But then we get the second ending, which was the, that it turns out that all of the story that we just witnessed was the story that he was writing at the manor, that none of this had happened, and that he was just writing it all. And this is what he delivered to his publisher, the next day. And so it was interesting. I was like, okay, I like the original ending better. The second ending wasn't as good in a way. I felt that kind of like took away from the fun of that first ending. So,
well, I agree, especially since when you see that first ending, there's the part where all the Grisbane family turned out to be actors, and you see them interacting with the other actors that were all part of the performance. And considering you've got all these actors who at this point are pretty late in their careers, and all of them have probably at different points of their careers been murdered,
right,
in this horrific ways on screen, to see them like playing actors and like, you know, shooting the shit and talking to each other about like, oh yeah, it's like, that was I liked your accent that you were going for there. Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. Like, it's kind of a cute way of paying tribute to these performers. And so it's taken away, and you find out like it's everything that you just previously saw was just written by Desi Arnaz's character. It's kind of, it does take a little bit away from it.
Yeah. It takes away from the fun of everything that you just watched. And like, that's where it's like, that's where I felt that like it kind of undercut it in a way, because it was just like, oh, it was just his imagination the whole time. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's fine, but it's not as fun as that ending.
Yeah, I keep doing this, but it's like when after it got to that point, I was like thinking of like, you know what I thought of? The Game by David Fincher.
Okay. Yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yeah. I thought of that. What I really thought of, and what I compared this movie to, is another couple of movies that came afterward that may have taken inspiration, maybe, from this movie, mm-hmm. was Clue. Okay. And April Fool's Day.
Oh yes.
So I think April Fool's Day most especially. You know, Clue with the kind of multiple endings. But April Fool's Day with the direct teasing of people being murdered, but not really. Mm-hmm. So definitely but that's why I liked that aspect of it, was just because I was like, okay, well, this is very much in that vein, and I like both of those movies. So I was like, okay, you know, I'm with it. So, but yeah, The Game also, where there's something going on, whereas The Game takes it a lot more seriously. Mm-hmm. I need to revisit that movie. It's been a while since I've seen it. But yeah, this is a fun movie. I think, you know, even spoiling it for everybody, that it's still fun to watch, even with that spoiler in there, because, It's You'll have to get past Desi Arnaz's acting. It's not horrible. Don't get me wrong. He's not a horrible actor. He's not great, but he's not. You know what? If it just feels like somebody who hasn't acted a lot, and it's very 80s also. So in terms of his acting, everybody else is, you know, doing much, much better. Like watching any of the other classic actors, they're doing their job at the top of their game. So watch it for that, because that's a lot of fun. But anything else you have for me on that one that we didn't mention?
I think you've pretty much covered it. I think like one of the reasons why probably House on Haunted Hill works a little bit slightly better than House of Long Shadows is also House of Long Shadows goes on a little bit too long.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's got a slightly, it's like about a half hour longer than House on Haunted Hill. But I think if you shaved 15 minutes off of House of the Long Shadows, you'd probably be at a much better runtime. It definitely, there's things that it just meanders here and there. But yeah, I agree with you. But yeah, no, they're both fun. I think they make a good combo with each other. Like we said, with Vincent Price in a creepy house. It's was a lot of fun watching both of these. It definitely makes me want to watch more Vincent Price, of course. So I'll probably definitely be checking out some more of his stuff. These were a lot of fun. Thank you for bringing them to me this time.
Oh, you're welcome, Robert. It's glad to chat about a couple of old school Vincent Price movies with you.
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything else? I know I just asked that, but is there anything else the left that we didn't talk about that you wanted to mention before we left?
I think I'll just close out by saying this, just more in a general category.
Yeah.
Another reason why I've like always been a big fan of Vincent Price, and this is more of a personal reason, is just like growing up, I think that like watching so much Vincent Price stuff as a young kid was made me understand the concept of what an actor was.
Okay.
So basically it's like this: when you're a young kid and you're watching a movie or a TV show for the first time, you don't know who these people are. You just accept them as that role.
Yeah.
As a kid growing up, I watched, there's so many things. I'm like Gen X. So I was born in the late 70s, grew up in the 80s. So around that time, I'm watching like reruns of old TV shows and old movies and I would just see Vincent Price everywhere.
Everywhere.
He'd be Egghead on Batman. He was in
the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, he was in the special Hawaiian episodes of the Brady Bunch. As a kid on PBS, he was the host of Mystery. So he was the voice of Radigan in The Great Mouse Detective.
Yeah,
probably one of the most underrated Disney movies of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah, in the 80s, like he was the voice in Thriller. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, yeah, it's just like he was everywhere in the 80s. Because by that time he was a megastar before that, but by the 80s he was like the master of horror, basically. The actor you most closely associated with horror in general, and classic horror.
So seeing him in all this stuff, it's like, oh, wait a minute, this guy gets to pretend to be all these different types of things.
Yeah,
that's a job, I guess.
So
that's how I kind of understand like what an actor was. Finally, it was because of Vincent Price. So
that's
it was
awesome.
Kind of it was one of the reasons why I also wanted to program this, because it was just I have a, like I was saying earlier at the very beginning, I have a soft spot for Vincent Price. And I know we've on your podcast, you talk about a lot of like horror movies, but they tend to be a little bit on the modern side. And I feel maybe we can go old school for a change.
Yeah, definitely. No, for sure. You know, it's always good to go back and check out the stuff that's classic and that inspired everybody else in more recent times. And, you know, it's good to go back and, you know, while, you know, like we said, there's more modern sensibilities, more modern storytelling. Now it's always good to go back and go see what came before, and appreciate what they did with the limitations that they had as well. Like, you know, it's, you know, black and white and with limited makeup effects and that kind of stuff. It's, do they succeed in what they're trying to do? And by and large, I'd say most of the time, yes. You know, even the cheesy, goofiest stuff, you know, they did what they could. And, you know, I no different than direct video schlock that, you know, we had in the '80s as well. So, so, but yeah, no, this was definitely fun. Thank you very much. And, why don't you let people know where they can find you online?
Sure. Again, as you said at the intro, I run the Boston Horror Society, which is a social group for horror fans in Massachusetts, but also surrounding states like Rhode Island and New Hampshire and such. We check out movies, book signings, conventions. To put a timestamp on this podcast, next Sunday, our group is going to be checking out Evil Dead the Musical, which is stopping in Boston. So we do a lot of fun stuff for people who like spooky stuff in the area. You can find Boston Horror Society. If you just do a Google search, you'll find the meetup page and you'll find the Facebook page. I'm on Twitter and Blue Sky under Beantown Horrors. It's like only February, but I mean, we've already got lots of spooky stuff in the works for this year. That's awesome. Yes.
All right. Great. All right. Well, definitely go check that out. And I thank you again for coming on.
It was great being back on.
All right. Thanks again to Jason for joining me. Since I missed last Friday's episode on Black Widow with Katrina, I'm going to actually run that on Wednesday. And then on Friday, a new episode with Katrina again on Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Then on Monday, Amber Knapp returns the show with Phantom of the Mall, Eric's Revenge, and Chopping Mall. Thanks for listening. Creepy and Geeky is a part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcast Network. Please check out morbidlybeautiful.com/podcasts for more great shows. If you like what you've heard, please consider giving the show 5 stars and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Also, please share the podcast on social media to help spread the word. Make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or at creepyandgeeky.com. Music for the podcast is Gratitude, composed by Harper Smith. You can follow the podcast on social media at Creepy and Geeky on both Twitter and Instagram. If you'd like to follow me, I'm GeekThulu on Twitter and Geek.Thulu on Instagram. You can support the podcast by ordering teas and more on TeePublic or by donating to the coffee page. All of the links are in the show notes. Finally, don't forget, stay creepy.